evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Nabil Biagio, live from Studio 14. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Tuesday, June 13th, 2023. Regional leaders resolved to send a committee to help mediate the conflict in Sudan,
so that we can speak to them directly on behalf of IGAD with a view of stopping the war that is raging in Sudan.
And many parts of Sudan's capital, Khartoum, and the Darfur region remain inaccessible to aid workers amid raging fighting.
We're looking at around 40% of the population not knowing where their next meal would come from. And the situation before was already extremely challenging in terms of food security.
We will have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. First, we begin with this correction. In yesterday's show, we heard a story about efforts aimed at reconciling the primate of the Episcopal Church of South Sudan, Justin Badi Arama, and the former Archbishop of the Jonglei Internal Province of the Episcopal Church of South Sudan, Ruben Akurdit. In the story, we erroneously reported that a court ruling in December 2020 asked the Episcopal Church to postpone Akurdit's expulsion and the appointment of any successors pending a final ruling on the matter, and that Archbishop Arama rejected the court ruling, saying the decision was incorrect. We have since learned this information is inaccurate. In addition, contrary to our report, the court dismissed the case filed by Akurdit and said it cannot meddle in church matters, thus advising the case be handled in a church tribunal set up on a basis agreed to by the parties. Leaders from the Intergovernmental Authority on Development, or IGAD, say they will send a delegation to meet with Sudanese Army leader General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan and Rapid Support Forces Commander General Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo in 10 days' time in hopes of mediating talks between the two warring generals to end the fighting in Sudan and restore peace in the country. Waki Simon Wudu has more for VOA from Juba.
In an audio statement released Monday by IGAD Secretariat, Kenyan President William Ruto said the leaders of Kenya, Ethiopia, South Sudan, and Somalia have been tasked to meet General Al-Burhan and General Dagalo to quell the violence in Sudan and restore peace and stability. Ruto read a resolution of the regional bloc during a Monday summit of the heads of state in Djibouti,
so that we can speak to them directly on behalf of IGAD with a view of stopping the war that is raging in Sudan, ceasing all manner of hostilities.
IGAD Executive Secretary Wekene Gebehu said the bloc is extremely concerned about the continued violence in Sudan and stressed that in war there are no real winners. He said for a credible cessation of hostilities to take place, the bloodshed must first stop. He called the ramifications of a protracted conflict in Sudan for the region and the world at large unthinkable. Ruto says the move to quickly engage the two leaders in face-to-face talks is aimed at saving lives and protecting the infrastructure in Khartoum and elsewhere. He says opening humanitarian corridors is an opportunity to prevent further loss of life and allow the safe evacuation of civilians who want to leave.
We have also agreed that in the next 3 weeks, we also begin the process an inclusive national dialogue.
Saudi Arabia and the United States have led the warring parties in peace talks over the past several weeks in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, but the talks were suspended 2 weeks ago following multiple violations of ceasefires by both sides. Fighting resumed in Khartoum, parts of western Darfur, El Geneina in northern Darfur, and other parts of the country, said Gebeyehu. He says IGAD is calling upon all the parties to cease all hostilities and give dialogue a chance. Again, Kenya's William Ruto.
We have also agreed that in the next 2 weeks, we will discuss with the generals on providing a humanitarian corridor so that humanitarian support can be made available to those in need, especially the children, the women, the people who are hurt.
The UN says 1.6 million people have been displaced since fighting broke out in Sudan in April 15th. The U.S.-based nonprofit Anti-Conflict Location and Event Data Project estimates that at least 1,800 people have been killed so far. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
Is still on the IGAD meeting on Sudan. Leaders from the Intergovernmental Authority on Development meeting in Djibouti discussed the nearly 2.5-month-old conflict in Sudan and the security and humanitarian problems resulting from it. As part of the roadmap to end the conflict, the leaders have proposed a face-to-face meeting between General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, commander of the Sudan Armed Forces, and General Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, commander of the Rapid Support Forces. IGAD hopes the meeting will take place within 2 weeks. Mohamed Al-Ta'aishi is a former member of the Sudan Sovereignty Council. He tells VOA's James Batty the proposed two-week time frame is too long because of the fluid situation in Sudan.
The historical role that IGAD organization being played in Sudan, I have to mention the comprehensive peace talk that's agreed on the Naivasha agreement. Coming from that background, I think the organization looking for its traditional role to mediate the peace process in Sudan. Regardless of that things, I think they now calling for a face-to-face meeting between General Burhan and General Hemeti before going to put a proposal of the comprehensive peace process.
But is it possible to have a face-to-face meeting between General Burhan and Dagalo?
I think there is two problems in this proposal. Number one, the proposal for 2 weeks for that meeting. I don't think the current conflict here in Khartoum can wait until that time to come. I think by that time, there should be major development on the ground. So I think that is not workable, in my opinion. Number two, I think it is too far for IGAD to reach that face-to-face meeting. I don't think that is possible by now. And I think would be possible for IGAD to call for a pre-leaders meeting before calling for a head-to-head meeting between General Burhan and Hemeti. I don't think that is possible, in my opinion.
What do you mean pre-leader meeting? What is that?
Well, I think there is an option for the IGAD to call for a representative from RSF and also representative from SAF for this time. Before that meeting to be held, I don't think it's possible for the IGAD to call for a head-to-head meeting between Burhan and Hemeti.
Do you think the civilian groups in Sudan have any role in any attempt by IGAD to bring about peace?
Well, I think there is some facts we got to consider on this process. Number one, we cannot ignore the role of the international mission in Sudan. And number two, I think there is an ongoing facilitators in the Sudan situation. That's a combination between the United States of America and Saudi Arabia. We cannot ignore this role, not only in this incidents, even when the political process was developing, the American and the Saudi and Emirates, which we call it the GUAT group, play a major role in this development happening in Sudan, in the security issues and the political issues. We cannot ignore this fact as well.
That is Mohamed Al-Ta'aishi, former member of Sudan's Sovereignty Council. He spoke with my colleague James Batty from the Sudanese capital, Khartoum. And still on Sudan, Saudi Arabia and the United States expressed their deep regret over the return of the Sudanese Armed Forces, SAF, and the paramilitary rapid support forces, RSF, to violence immediately after the end of a 24 ceasefire on Saturday. In the statement, the two countries expressed that any military solution to the conflict is unacceptable and that they strongly condemn the continued violence. Khidr Haroun is former Sudanese ambassador to the United States. He explained to VOA senior analyst Mohammed Ashinawi why repeated calls for a ceasefire in Sudan failed.
For the ceasefire to hold and for the violence to stop permanently, the Sudanese armed forces conditions that RSF should evacuate 32 hospitals in Greater Khartoum, including a midwife hospital, which have been turned to military barracks and spots for snipers. Violation that deprive the entire population from medical assistance is a very great problem. In some areas, for example, in West Darfur, all kidney failure patients lost their life due to the occupation of hospitals. The second condition to be met, the RSF kicked almost 100,000 of population of Khartoum from their own homes and stayed in there. Those residents, they are asked to evacuate them. People may not know that the electric grid of electricity and fresh water are controlled by the RSF, and they are sabotaged completely, add to the suffering of millions who are stranded in Khartoum in a blackout for now 2 months. Third, also they are asked to stop harassing population and stop raping women, looting and killing randomly. And you should know that also the civil service in Sudan for the last 2 months since the beginning of this ugly war is not functioning at all. No salaries have been paid to the people. The entire system of education also is collapsed. For the first time in the history of Sudan, there is no examination for a high school certificate this year. All this because the entire civil service of the country is totally stopped now. So the repeated request from the mediator for ceasefire, 10 times they arranged some sort of ceasefire, but it didn't work because of these things. Without such guarantees, we should not expect any kind of ceasefire.
But Saudi Arabia and the U.S. also affirmed that they are ready to resume the talks between the two parties and pledged to work to coordinate with regional and international partners to stop the fighting, as well as coordination with the relevant Sudanese civilian authorities to ensure their participation in shaping the future of Sudan. How significant is to coordinate with Sudanese civilians in shaping Sudan's future?
I think Saudi Arabia and U.S. affirm the resumption of talk between these combating military powers will never be of use. And I would assure you that both warring parties, they would sit down for talking, but will not reach any conclusions which people are waiting for the last 2 months. In regard to this issue of to coordinate with international and regional and partisans to help Sudan, will doom to fail for a very simple reason. Such coordination was in place since October 2021 up to the 15th of April 2010, through when this war broke out. It will fail. It's failed, and it is one of the major reasons for this ugly war, because this mechanism defined the Sudanese civilian erroneously. The Sudanese civilians' authorities should come through fair and transparent general election. They tried before to narrow the concept of Sudanese civilians by hand-picked civilians from one segment of Sudanese people and excluded the majority of the people of Sudan. They just hand-picked people from freedom and justice forces, considering them the only stakeholder in democracy of Sudan, lifting out the total population or the majority of Sudanese people from participating in the shape the future of their country. Not only that, a day before the outbreak of the war, they threaten other segments of the people who refuse to sign a framework agreement. The majority of the people, including the army, they refuse to do it, this because you cannot handpick a small group from only for small parties in the country and to consider them as the only stakeholders of the Sudanese people. If you want to succeed, you have to open the floor for all the Sudanese parties, all Sudanese people to participate in the way they wish to reach a conclusion of elected a government which represents the whole Sudanese.
That's Khidr Haroun, former Sudanese ambassador to the United States. He spoke from the U.S. state of Virginia with my colleague Mohammed Ashenawi. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, we look at reports of oil pollution in South Sudan's Unity State. Stay tuned.
If you are in Sudan witnessing events taking place there, or if you have family you are talking to there, you can call us on WhatsApp and let us know how things are going there. Dial the international code plus one, then 202-258-3076. The number again, the international code plus one, then 202-258-3076.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Officials with the UN World Food Program in Sudan say it is impossible to access certain locations in the country due to intense fighting and fragile conditions. A UFP spokesperson in Sudan says the food agency is unable to reach people caught up in crossfire in Khartoum and West Darfur states. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Juba.
Lenny Kinsley, WFP's head of communications in Sudan, calls the humanitarian situation catastrophic as fighting between the army and the rapid support forces intensifies in and around the capital Khartoum, Al Obeid, and Al Janina of West Darfur State.
We're looking at around 40% of the population not knowing where their next meal would come from. And the situation before was already extremely challenging in terms of food security, mainly due to intercommunal violence, climate shocks, the economic crisis. And now with the ongoing conflict, it's just going to push more and more people into hunger.
In a report released today, the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs in Sudan said nearly 1.9 million people have been displaced since the conflict began on April 15th. Some have fled to safer locations inside the country, while others have left Sudan. The report says humanitarian partners have reached 1.8 million people with life-saving assistance and protection services in April and May, despite insecurity and operational challenges. WFP says it has only managed to reach about 850,000 with emergency food assistance. Kinsley says it is difficult to deliver food aid during heavy fighting.
When we know where people need support and that they need it immediately, but when there is fighting going on and people can hardly step outside of their door, it makes it extremely difficult to move entire convoys of trucks with food assistance across the country to places where people need support.
Kinsley is calling on the international community to step up support for Sudan and urges both sides to silence guns so humanitarian assistance can be delivered to the vulnerable.
Both parties need to stop the fighting and put their actions where their words are and actually take concrete actions for a lasting and reliable ceasefire and to stop making the situation worse for the Sudanese civilians who are bearing the brunt of this conflict.
UN OCHA says despite the challenges, aid agencies continue to provide life-saving assistance and sustenance to those affected by the conflict, including the internally displaced. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
And from Sudan, we move to South Sudan's Unity State, where a top official is calling on the national government in Juba to investigate reports of extensive air and water pollution caused by oil extraction in the state. Deng Gai Deng has the details for VOA from Bor.
Unity State Deputy Governor Tor Tungwar says environmental pollution in the area has caused serious health problems for South Sudanese, including children, some of whom have become blind after bathing in polluted water, and others who are born with deformities.
We have many cases of pollution arising from oil. A child from Cochin County was affected in the eye when he was trying to take a bath in the river and ended up losing his sight. We also have a big problem where kids are being born deformed, some with no leg and others even blind.
Deputy Governor Tungwar says many oil wells were covered by floodwaters during the last rainy season, which can cause polluted water. He warns unless national authorities intervene, the situation may worsen in the coming rainy season. Tungwar says the state has raised the matter several times with officials from the National Petroleum Ministry, who he says are well aware that toxic pollution may be taking place at oil fields. He stressed that technical and scientific research is needed in oil-producing areas to determine the magnitude of the problem. Akwoch Ajang Nyanom, who chairs the South Sudan Civil Society Alliance, says addressing environmental hazards in oil-producing areas is an urgent matter that needs government intervention.
We call on the government of the Republic of South Sudan and oil companies in the Republic of South Sudan to prioritize issues of environment in oil-producing areas, and especially in Upper Nile. Civil Society Alliance, we had previously written to the government of the Republic of South Sudan through the Ministry of Petroleum, and we have asked the Ministry to do environmental auditing, which it was done a year ago. That has been recommendation from the Ministry, and yet those recommendations are not addressed.
Nyanom says the national government should investigate the oil companies and hold those responsible to account for toxins in the water and air. Efforts to reach other stakeholders in the oil sector for comment were unsuccessful. Port Kang Chol, South Sudan Petroleum Minister, did not respond to repeated calls and texts. Ayuel Akoch, the vice president of Dar Petroleum Operating Company, a consortium of oil exploration and production companies operating in South Sudan's Unity State, also declined to comment on this story. Joseph Africana Battel, undersecretary in the Ministry of Environment and Forestry in South Sudan, acknowledges the ministry is aware of the impacts of toxic pollution seeping into the water in oil-producing areas, including Unity State.
There is an environmental audit of all the oil producing areas that is happening, and we're expecting results from those audits. So they have taken water samples, air samples, blood samples, soil samples from animals and people. So these samples are being tested in some really good labs.
Africana says medical tests should be conducted to the deformed baby born in Unity State. He says his ministry will take action after all the results are completed and recommendations are presented from the environmental audit. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaiding in Bor.
Former U.S. President Donald Trump will be arraigned Tuesday afternoon in his home state of Florida on charges stemming from his alleged mishandling of classified national security documents after he left the White House in 2021. The arraignment will take place in a federal courtroom in downtown Miami. Celia Mendoza of VOA Spanish Service is at the courtroom in Miami. VOA's Douglas Impuga reached her for an update.
Right now, we have seen a large number of pro-Trump protesters. They have arrived outside the court, but also just in the past few minutes, we see a group of people with rainbow flags. They are saying Trump indictment. They're celebrating the indictment. So it's a mood of a celebration for some. Others are very upset about it. Just as we speak, a Jeep with flags of the United States and pro-Trump messages is passing by. The police has not really restricted the access to the location. as in a few hours, the former president will be arriving for his 3 p.m. local time arraignment in the court. So some of the people are just basically coming to let their opinions know. And they're mixing with the media. We have hundreds of journalists that are gathered here for this historic day, as is the first former president of the United States to be charged with criminal charges in the federal level.
Those who are supporting Trump and those against who are happy about his being arraigned, are they peaceful?
So far, they seem to be peaceful. However, we see that some of them are very emotional. And the police said, as well as the mayor's office, that they will not do what New York did, which is keep them separate. So you can see one on top of the other. They're screaming to one another. We haven't seen any physical interaction, but definitely seems like things might heat up as the hours go by. It's very hot today in Miami, and we definitely are expecting that it gets just crowded as the hours go by.
Former President Trump will be arriving in a few hours. How is the security, the police and other security agencies handling the situation?
According to the police department, they are ready to assist and be on call. They said they will be able to handle between 5,000 to 50,000 people in this area. But just about 10 minutes ago, they closed one of the accesses to the area. Vehicles continue to pass by. So it's very different than what we saw in Manhattan during the last indictment that he faced. So it's a very different scene. It's a larger location. The worry is what could happen. We're talking about Florida, where open carry laws allow people with permits to carry guns to have them on them. New York doesn't have that. So it's the differences that we see. So far, I can say that they have been amicable, peaceful. That's something that it was highlighted by the protesters, actually, that they want this to be peaceful. But just time will tell what's going to happen.
And do we know whether they allow some members of the public and members of the press in the courtroom?
And members of the press were allowed to get into the building at 8:30 a.m. They were making a line since yesterday. The courtroom is on the 13th floor of the federal building, and it will be about 60 seats. 20 of those will be designed to accommodate members of the media as well as some members of the public. And the clerk is the person who is going to determine who goes into those seats. But in the fifth floor, it is an overflow room for 350 people that will accommodate members of the press as well as members of the public who will be able to watch through an internal signal that does not get recorded, because in federal court, you don't have access to video or audio. Those people will be able to be there and to watch from that floor. So that gives more access, and that was important for the court. Jonathan Goodman is the magistrate who is doing the indictment, and he also made a call to not accept any requests by the media to have electronic devices, such telephones, inside the court or inside the overflow room to avoid any sort of like a dissemination of images that were not permitted. So that's something that we know as of right now.
And that's all we prepared for you this Tuesday. Don't forget to check out voaafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. If you missed this broadcast, go to www.voaafrica.com/South Sudan. We leave you with Musa Juma and the song Sudan. I am your host, Nabil Biagio in Washington. On behalf of producer Kwame Ofori and engineer Bob Bass, thanks for taking the time to be with us. Remember to join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. General Joseph Lacombe.